Hi, this is Jim Copeland. I'm the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute, and I'm here today with my colleague Marie Griffin, a senior fellow with the Center for Legal Policy, who's come out with a new paper, It's a Crime: Flaws in Federal Statutes That Punish Standard Business Practices. So welcome, Marie. Tell us basically, what are we talking about in this paper?
Thank you, Jim. Well, this paper primarily focuses on the erosion of what I like to call the blameworthiness principle in American criminal law. Traditionally, criminal sanctions were reserved only for people who had really earned society's condemnation by freely choosing to engage in wrongful behavior. But we've moved away from that in recent decades. Increasingly, Congress is passing federal laws that criminalize innocent mistakes or understandable misunderstandings or misinterpretations of regulations.
So one of these issues that you bring up in the papers, interestingly, before the Supreme Court right now, or at least there's a couple cases before the Supreme Court, and a third that's coming. But one of those you talk about in the paper, United States v. Whitehawk, talks about problems with the so-called honest services fraud standards in the federal law, and you criticize such rules as being overly ambiguous and not giving notice, sufficient notice to individuals that they might be committing a crime. Can you talk a little bit about that case and then the broader principle about ambiguity and clarity in legal statutes?
Sure. Well, I think vagueness and ambiguity are among the most serious threats to the blameworthiness principle. If it's simply not clear until a judge decides what a statute prohibits, then how can the ordinary citizen make sure that he or she is on the right side of the law? The Weirach case is a good case in point. Bruce Weirach was charged and convicted for failing to provide so-called intangible rights to honest services to the state of Alaska in his capacity as a state legislator there. And the facts on the ground were prosecutors alleged he had a cozy relationship with a particular oil and gas company called VACO, and he had sent them his resume to be considered for employment after his term of office was completed. But during the period that he had sent his resume in but was still in office, he cast a few votes that affected VECO's interests, and he did that without publicly disclosing the potential conflict of interest that his job application created. The thing is that nowhere in Alaska state law or in the extensive ethics rules that govern the conduct of state lawmakers is there any prophylactic rule requiring the disclosure of such potential conflicts of interest. So the trial court, I thought, reasonably concluded that Weirach could not possibly have failed to provide honest services to the state of Alaska since he did absolutely everything that Alaska told him he had to do. The appellate court disagreed, however. The Ninth Circuit held that federal judges, pursuant to the federal honest services fraud provision, could impose additional duties on state legislators and, by extension, on private business employees other than the articulated expectations of the states or companies for which they work. This is a big problem because if judges are making up the rules of fiduciary relationships on the fly, then none of us can be entirely sure that we're following those rules.
Well, that's deeply disturbing to those of us who are active in any sort of professional endeavor. There's another problem you point out with some of these federal statutes that criminalize conduct, and you actually lead with this in your paper, and that's the erosion of traditional mens rea or guilty mind standards in the law. In other words, traditionally, I'll let you explain what mens rea is, but traditionally you've had to have a so-called guilty mind to be guilty of a crime. This is a long-standing tradition in Anglo-American law, but that's been eroding over recent decades, and there are lots of new statutes that don't worry about that principle. Is that basically a correct characterization? Explain a little about what mens rea is and how this be eroding under the current federal criminal law.
Well, traditional standards of mens rea are absolutely eroding, and this is an unfortunate trend for which both Congress and the courts are jointly responsible. When the common law of crimes was codified in the 20th century into statutes, the mens rea requirements were generally represented by words like willfully, knowingly, purposely, or at least negligently or recklessly. And so what those words specify is the level of guilty mind or the level of mens rea required in order for a particular conduct to constitute a crime. But increasingly, Congress has been passing statutes that lack any mens rea language. And as a result, you can violate the law as a result of a completely and totally innocent mistake, not even negligent mistake about the facts on the ground. In one famous case, a president of a pharmaceutical company was criminally convicted because his company reshipped drugs that had mislabeled, you know, incorrect labels on them that had actually been applied by a previous shipper. And no negligent conduct was alleged, and yet this person is a criminal, according to the federal criminal law. Courts have also been negligent. When it comes to traditional crimes, crimes like forms of theft that Congress may have codified in certain instances, the courts tend to assume or imply a mens rea element, even when Congress neglects to include the magic words in the statute. But the courts apply an entirely different standard to business regulations, or regulations of sort of ordinary economic conduct. When it comes to those regulatory schemes, the courts are quick to agree that Congress didn't mean to require a guilty mind, that in fact business people can be strictly liable for these kinds of mistakes. I think it chills legitimate business conduct and is a problem. I also think it's a wrong-headed approach to ensuring regulatory compliance, which is a legitimate state interest but can be pursued by civil means.
The third main point that you bring up in the paper, I think, is even more deeply troubling in a sense for those of us. Congress is at least accountable to the voters at some level, and the courts are at least bound by some precedents and can review each other. But you point to a lot of instances in the federal law now where it's not actually the law or the statute, but it's the regulations that are promulgated by various bureaucracies in the federal government. And those vast, complex regulations often can be the predicate for criminal violations, where if someone runs afoul of a regulation, even unwittingly, he or she could be sent to jail for committing a crime. Is that right? And how's that happening?
That is the current state of things. Congress has passed laws that make criminal violations of, you know, the extraordinarily complex and ever-changing code of federal regulations, which you know, no one person can master, and on which even experts regularly disagree as to the meaning of these highly specialized regulations. The problem is that usually it's so-called knowing violations of the Code of Federal Regulations that are penalized, but the word knowing doesn't mean what the ordinary layperson thinks it ought to mean under that circumstance. For example, there's a case involving a pesticide company that wasn't sure quite how to handle disposing of a particular product that they had. They hired an environmental consultant to look at the regulations and give them an expert opinion. And then they were criminally indicted for following that expert opinion. Why? Because a mistake of law, as lawyers call it, is not a legitimate excuse for getting the meaning of a regulation wrong. All the knowingly requirement means is that you have to have known what you did. You don't have to have known that it was a violation of a regulation. And very reasonable, good faith misunderstandings of regulations are grounds for criminal cases right now.
Wow, well, that's a lot of stuff that sounds wrong with our federal criminal law. What are a few of the ideas that you suggest in the paper for how we might fix them?
Well, there are a number of relatively simple things that that both Congress can do and the courts can do to address this issue. One is simply that Congress can start including appropriate mens rea language in new criminal laws that it passes, and also amend existing laws to include appropriate mens rea language, you know, such as willfully, knowingly, purposely, to clarify that they do require criminal intent, or they should require criminal intent. They should also adopt the model penal codes guidelines for the interpretation of these words. Right now, there's a lot of confusion, for example, surrounding the interpretation of the word willfully. Does this mean to imply that a good faith mistake of law is a defense or is not a defense? Adopting the model penal code, which is followed by many, many states, but not by the federal government, would solve those kinds of interpretive problems and provide clarity and predictability to the federal criminal law. One thing that courts can do that would be very helpful is to reinvigorate the rule of lenity. The rule of lenity is a traditional interpretive principle that says that ambiguous or vague statutes, if they impose criminal penalties, will be construed narrowly rather than broadly. And this is just an expression of the general principle that the Americans deserve to know in advance what the law prohibits. And so if you have a vague statute that's susceptible to two meanings, it should be given the narrow meanings so that people can reliably steer clear of the law. This common principle in the early 20th century has been largely abandoned in the last few decades. Even with respect to genuinely ambiguous statutes, courts have largely disregarded challenges by criminal defendants based on the rule of lenity. I think that this needs to change.
Well, thanks, Marie. I would encourage all of our listeners to look at Marie's full paper, It's a Crime, Flaws in Federal Statutes That Punish Standard Business Practices, which is available at the Manhattan Institute's website, www.manhattan-institute.org, or at our legal web magazine, www.pointoflaw.com. Again, this is Jim Copeland with the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute with my colleague, Marie Griffin. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.